Well, for some reason, we're hearing the term a lot where people are saying, "Tis the season." Not sure exactly where they're all coming from, but very popular in the world today, not only in this country, not just in religion, but in the secular world as well. People are drawn to a particular observance this season of the year. You can put up that first image, Mark. In the New Testament, it speaks of a bunch of events that people associate with this season, correctly or not, and I think there's reason to say not, but the world loves to observe this particular occasion, the occasion of Jesus' birth. Religious and non-religious people alike rehearse a storyline that reflects some of the biblical narrative, but they blend it with other traditional misconceptions. And I think that's the key to understand about what's going on at this particular season. A lot of people really don't care. I mean, it's fun to do. Everybody's doing it. Don't even think about whether or not it shows any disrespect for God's word. There's two major elements, actually three, but let's look at two of them to begin with. There's the story of the shepherds, and that's found in Luke chapter 2. Very familiar, we don't need to read it, I don't think. But then there's another significant story or narrative that involves the kings of the east, wise men. And that's in Matthew 2. And since it's going to be a major part of this message, let's at least review some of the details that were given. Matthew 2, beginning in verse 1. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, "Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and are come to worship him." When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. That's a detail that most people don't pick up as to what that involves. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where Jesus Christ should be born. And they said unto him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet, And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art thou not the least among the princes of Judah? For out of you shall come a governor, that he shall rule my people Israel." And that's a reflection of Isaiah 9:6. Then Herod, when he had privately called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. That also is a key. And he said unto them, and he sent them, rather, to Bethlehem, and said, "Go and search diligently for the young child, and when you have found him, bring me word again, that I may come and worship him also." And when they had heard the king, they departed, and lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were come unto the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh, all expensive, extremely expensive gifts. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. Now, of course, we know of Herod's intent. The rest of that narrative tells us Herod had a certain problem with these officials from another country coming to him asking about the king of the Jews. He thought he was the king of the Jews. And you can understand, knowing Herod's nature, why that would be a certain problem. But we're given two significant events, that of the shepherds and that of these so-called wise men from the east. Are these two in any way connected? And that's the question I want to pose to you today, and I want to answer it as I understand there is a connection. It's a very surprising connection between the two. Those of you who might have remembered seeing the movie Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, there's an interesting line in that movie that I think is relevant today. They had robbed a train, blew a baggage car to smithereens, and, you know, of course, they decided to make a run for it, but the Pinkertons hired a posse to track them down. And in all of the efforts that they made to try and throw them off the trail, these guys stayed right on their trail. They tracked them. They sent a horse off in another direction, thinking to divert their attention. And here they are out there at night with torches, tracking them relentlessly. And the famous line was, "Who are those guys?" Okay? Now that's a question we should ask about these magi. People don't think to ask, but if they did ask, and if they followed it through, and if they realized who exactly they were, it makes a very big impact on the story. Who were these wise men who came to see the newborn king? And they recognized him as a king. Not necessarily in the sense that we might, or that the religious people of the day might. They recognized him as a king of an ethnicity, or rather, not of an ethnicity, but a king of a religion. And that's important to understand. And it's part of identifying who were these guys. The New Testament presents to us these basically two narratives that are associated with Christ's birth. Were there any other visitors? You would think there would be. I mean, this is a young baby. People would hear crying. People would inquire. Wouldn't there be other visitors? But we're not given a mention of any other people. I mean, after all, there was relatives. They were living in the area where some of their relatives were, one of them being John the Baptist's parents. They were related. Other visitors are not presented because they don't have the significance that these do. And what is that significance? Do we know how the events are connected? Let's throw up that second image, Mark. You might see pictures like this in greeting cards. Same is true of the other one. This is how it's envisioned of what that scene looked like. Now, there's a number of errors in this, but there's also a couple of interesting observations that shows that the painter, at least, recognized that it wasn't just three. And as we read in the narrative, they visited a house. Now, why there's a cow in a house, I don't know. They've got Joseph in the background with a staff and beard, looking like he's probably in his early 70s, I don't know. But they've got the child standing. Obviously, this is not a newborn. And there's at least 9 individuals there in the picture. So it's not just 3 wise men, which is the common perception. But this is how people picture the event. And it's interesting. But unless we know who they were and what they were doing there, what their intention was, we don't really know the story. Where did they come from? Who were they? When we know who they were, it's a very different picture. We need to consider the rest of the story. And that's what I want to present to you today. What is missed are the facts involving these potentates from the East. They weren't kings themselves, they're presented as that, but they had another function in the nation. And it's the historical factors that are extremely insightful. They present us with an even more interesting picture than what is normally told. Few people have ever heard who they really were, where exactly they came from, and especially what their real interest in Jesus' birth was. It was not insignificant, nor was it a matter merely of worship. They had other interests that were very important to them and to their nation. We're introduced to them as the Magi, that's what they're commonly called, though that's not necessarily the name that's presented in the Gospels. But as to their experience, they first saw a star from where they were, they say, in the east. Let's go to the next picture. They were in their capital, which is Ctesiphon, which is way over here, directly east of Jerusalem. And that distance is about 500 miles. The particular sighting they saw this star precipitated a lengthy pilgrimage from there to Jerusalem. Now think about how long that would have taken. These were people used to a cushy life. These were potentates. These were high-ranking individuals, the highest-ranking individuals in the nation of Parthia. And you can see the size of the Parthian Empire. The Parthian Empire was a rival to Rome. It was never conquered by Rome. And in many occasions where they had battles between them, Rome never conquered Parthia. They were respectful of each other, but they were similar powers as far as their military strength. But they saw a star. Why would it matter? When you see a star, and it may be a satellite or something new, you know, how important, how do you take it? They saw something, and to them it motivated them to do something highly unusual, highly risky, very involved, very much that involved a whole lot of effort on their part. And they had to get official approval to do it, considering who they were. Now just think about the elites in our country, the political elites or the movie stars or whatever. Do they ever camp out? Do they ever stay in Motel 6? No. They want the best of the best, okay? These high-ranking individuals would also have wanted to travel in style. And keep in mind, they had treasures with them. They would have been vulnerable on the road for a month. How long does it take to travel 500 miles on a camel? And I'm sure they didn't overdo it. Okay, these are elderly, some of them. But they had a lot of respect in their home country, and they were important to the country. These people were the ones who had the authority to appoint the kings of Parthia. They selected who was going to be the next king, or who was to be gotten rid of if they knew. And that was part of the problem. Because in Parthia, about this time, there was somewhat of a civil war going on at the upper levels of government. They were killing off their potential heirs to the throne of Parthia. Okay, this was what was going on. So the pool of potential heirs to the throne was getting pretty slim. They would have known that. Now keep in mind, the Parthians were frequent visitors to Jerusalem. You read in Acts 2, that incident of the changing of the tongues. The Parthians are listed first. They were the most frequent and the most populous of the visitors. And why was that? Because of who the Parthians were. At least the upper level of the Parthian nation were descendants of the 10 tribes of Israel. They retained some of the Jewish religion. Okay, they had other problems with other religions that they blended into what they were observing. But they were there in Jerusalem observing the holy days. One of which is pointed out being Pentecost. To observe Pentecost, you have to observe the whole set of spring holy days, because that's what determines when Pentecost is. But the Parthians were frequent attendees at the holy days in Jerusalem. So it wasn't so much a big deal that they were there, but who they were and who came with them was the problem. That passage that we read, it says that the whole nation, where is that? What verse is that? Verse 3, is it? Yeah. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Why is that? Let's keep in mind the context of the time. It was only about 40 years or so before that Parthia had conquered the Middle East, had conquered what's called the Levant, the Eastern Mediterranean. They established their own king. They placed a new king in Jerusalem. And that new king drove Herod out. This was before Herod was appointed king by Rome. So Herod had reason to be concerned about these people. Were they just worshipers coming to town like they claimed? Or were they an advance party spying out the land in anticipation of another invasion? It was only about 30 or 40 years before that Rome attacked Parthia. A fellow named Crassus, he was one of the three that was ruling in Rome at the time, one of the triumvirate. He decided he was going to make a name for himself. He financed his own army of 42,000 soldiers, invaded Parthia, and got shellacked by a smaller force yet. He went in with 42,000. He came home with about 10,000. He himself was killed. But this was shortly before the events that we're talking about. Those were still firm memories in the Jerusalemites. And you can see why they would be concerned if this force, and it was a force, when you send out several, and there could have been a dozen of them, high-ranking individuals, they would obviously have had an entourage with them, their servants, their supply train, and armed guards. So this was no small thing. It wasn't just three guys on camels like they picture. This was a from all appearances, a military force. So you can see why all Jerusalem would have some concern. Herod himself took the throne only after he deposed that king that had driven him off in the previous years. So here we have Parthian dignitaries, people with the ability or the rank to be able to appoint the kings of the Parthian nation, and that's no small empire. And they called their kings the King of Kings, because in various regions in the empire there were other lesser kings, so it's not a foreign idea that there would be a supreme king. But that was their primary interest. They were there to investigate someone that they knew, and they must have had an intelligence network to know. Now, we can read in the New Testament in two places. Where is it? There's two narratives that give us Jesus' genealogy. They didn't just make that up when this was being written. They knew that for decades, for centuries before. They knew the genealogy clear up to the present day from David. So this was a legitimate descendant of David, who to them was a potential heir of the Parthian throne. Now the excuse they used was that they were there to worship the king of the Jews. But let's think of the Jews in a broader sense. These weren't Jews ethnically. These were Jews religiously, because the Parthians retained a priesthood that was, in many respects, comparable or similar to what was going on in the Jewish world in Jerusalem. But they respected the Jewish religion. They attended the observances of the Jewish religion. So when they said King of the Jews, think of it also ethnically, not just religiously. Okay? So that's important. But they came to Jerusalem to identify, to connect with, and to, as they say, worship the King of the Jews. How do you worship a king? Have you thought about that? But not only that, to fund him. Jesus Christ, at that point in time, and his family were set for life financially with what they were given. Now that tells you also how seriously they took who he was. So this is no small event. But the question is, what brings them to Jerusalem? They said they saw his star in the east. How likely was that? That they were together and saw it as a group. That's the claim there. We saw his star in the east. Now, it wasn't there for long. So to see it, a number of them had to have been looking in the right direction at the right time. What time would that have been? It's another question we need to ask. And what did they see? Keep in mind the 500-mile distance between where they were and where this event took place. I'm going to jump ahead and make a statement here that I will prove later, and others have as well. But the time that they would have been looking in the direction of Jerusalem was at a particular time, a particular day. And that particular day was the day when they began to declare their new calendar. This was the lunar calendar. And they would have been looking towards the horizon just after sunset, looking to identify the first visible crescent, which would have proved the beginning of the seventh month. The first day of the seventh month we recognize as the Feast of Trumpets. They would have been looking towards Jerusalem. And what happened on that day? Angels appeared to the shepherds in the fields, and it lit up the area. And then after their announcement, a whole host of angels descended and sang this song to the shepherds. And then, after 3 or 4 minutes, whatever, it rose back up again. They would have seen that. It's like a distance from Salt Lake City to Denver. If there was a meteor that fell in Salt Lake City on a clear night, could they have seen it from Denver? I suspect very well they could have, if it's bright enough. This is what they saw. That's my feeling. This was what they saw. Very unusual. They're looking towards Jerusalem. They're looking towards the sunset, just after sunset, to try and identify the first visible crescent, which would have started the seventh month of that new year to them. They saw this bright light come down, hover over Jerusalem. They knew where Jerusalem was. They worshiped towards the temple. They're looking at it. This, not only was this bright light coming down and dwelling and then going back up again, but it was right over Jerusalem. They would have been looking there anyway. Okay? Now, there's others that recognize that, but we'll get to that point. But it was with that sighting they realized the significance of what they had just seen. And they were so convinced of it that they got together and began planning their trip to Jerusalem. It took a lot of preparation. There's a lot of logistics in something like that. You don't just jump on your horse and gallop off. Not these people. They had responsibilities. They had power. They had prestige. And they were going to go a long ways on their own. So you can begin to see the dynamics of this little story that we read in Matthew chapter 2. There's more there than meets the eye. And that's what we need to understand. But they were going not only to worship a Messiah. They weren't thinking in terms of a Messiah. That's not the term they use. They went there to worship a king of a major ethnicity, because they considered themselves Jewish to some extent, even though they were of the northern tribes who were taken captive by Assyria many centuries before, but ended up being the dominant power in the area after a succession of empires, Babylon next, and then Alexander the Great and so on. But they inherited the nation after these other powers had come and gone. And they were a major power for nearly 500 years. Another 220 or so years after Christ's birth, they were still a major power until they were driven out by the Sasanians. But we need to understand that Parthia was not an insignificant power. This is not an insignificant event that the elite of Parthia would come to the very house where Jesus Christ was. Now, were they there on their own? Or were they inspired to do what they did? That's something else we need to think about. I pose to you, God wanted them there. Okay? They saw the star from a distance. They made the trip to Jerusalem. And God provided an angel to lead them right to the very house. Can we say with God, with confidence, God wanted them there? And he wanted this story to be told to us so that hopefully people will think to ask, who are these guys? Okay? They're important people. Perhaps at the time, some of the most important people on earth. And they're there bowing before an infant. Now, another thing that's said about them is that they were called astronomer priests. And that tells us also something about the calendar issue. They were astronomers. They were mathematicians as well. People looked at them as semi-magicians because of all of the things that they could do and all of the things they knew. And they knew Bible prophecy. That's another factor that we need to realize. That's why when they saw the star, there was no doubt in their mind as to what that meant. And its unusual movement, they knew. They knew something even before it happened. But God wanted them there, and he wanted the story told so that hopefully people would wake up and realize there's more here than meets the casual reading. These were important people. All right, let's go to the next page here. Now, you could make the argument, well, actually, Jesus Christ wasn't a legitimate son through David's line because Joseph was, but Mary was not. We don't know. The thing is, with these Parthian elites, it didn't matter about the genealogy so much. It was the matter of legitimacy. They regarded him as legitimate, as though Joseph was his father. So that little question is somewhat set aside. But they went to Jerusalem. The city was alarmed at their presence. Not sure what they were really there for. They may have been spying out, anticipating a future invasion. They didn't know. But they're asking around, and they didn't get a good answer. Apparently, people were not willing to say what they knew, not even the priesthood. Now, keep in mind that these were rival religious people. Okay, so the priesthood wouldn't necessarily talk to them. Herod had to pretty much beat it out of them to find out where this child would be born. And apparently he was still residing in Bethlehem at the time. But they just weren't able to get a good answer as to where to look. But God provided the angel that led them there. So we know that this is something that was important even to God, that these people would make contact with the coming Messiah. I might mention that we have a positive indication of who these people were from Josephus. He's talking about the 10 tribes, and then this is in his Antiquities, Book 11, Chapter 5, Paragraph 2, where he says that the 10 tribes comprise a multitude too great to number living beyond the Euphrates. And the Euphrates is that western border of Parthia. Josephus knew where the 10 tribes were at that point in time. Here's what an internet source says about them. The major rival of Rome to the east was the Parthian Empire. The Parthians had a council of Magistanes, the upper house of that council, was composed of men who also held the top government offices in the empire. This dual capacity of priest and counselor is where the civil, political, and religious roles became connected in the Parthian environment. They became the supreme priestly caste of the Parthian Empire, the Magi. Their duties included absolute choice of the king of the realm, and that will impact Herod's reaction when they arrive seeking he that is born king of the Jews. Herod thought that was him. When Herod heard that, he recognized the threat. Now, Herod's a guy that was very power jealous. He even killed his own wife and at least one of his sons over political problems having to do with his authority or succession. So he was no sweetheart when it came to protecting his office or his authority. So he recognized the threat, and that's why he determined to kill this child. Now, it says that he was a young child at the time. It doesn't refer to him in the terms that would represent being an infant still. And that's why Herod wanted to have all of the young males in the region killed under 2 years old. So that also tells us that the time that they came there was some months after the event of seeing the star. It wasn't right away. They didn't show up just as the shepherds were leaving. That's how the Christmas cards are presented. That isn't how it happened. This was a long distance to travel. Would have been at least a month for people of that sort. So he was somewhat grown up at this point. It calls him a young child. Now, we know he was in Jerusalem for some months because of the accounts that we have of the temple ceremonies that both his mother and he participated in. So it was some time later. And that's something else that people aren't too aware of. But these Magi were very important people. They had to be recognized for who they were. And the New Testament presents us a picture of who they were that we need to follow through and investigate ourselves, because it changes the whole nature of this thing. And it also gives us one more connection as to how to determine when Jesus Christ was actually born. It wasn't the middle of winter. The Magi wouldn't have been traveling through the winter. It gets cold in that part of the world at times. Keep in mind who they were. They would have had some time to get their entourage together. They would have waited till it got a little warmer. So it's likely that the earliest that they would have been in Jerusalem was the following spring. Not the same time that the shepherds were there. And that's reflected in Herod's edict to identify and kill all the newborn males up to 2 years of age. So let's go to the next image. This reflects their pilgrimage. You can see there's a trade route that goes directly from Ctesiphon to Damascus and then down to Jerusalem. There was major roads there too that connected those two towns. But that's likely the route that they would have taken. And it's my feeling that, well, it also says they knew Bible prophecy. That's for sure. For example, Isaiah 9, 6 and 7. Unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. You know that part. The government shall be upon his shoulders. What did they think This is a descendant of David who was going to rule for sure the whole house of Israel. And keep in mind, they understood that the house of Israel was two major houses at that point in time and will remain so clear up until the time of the second coming. You have the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. Two houses. Ezekiel 37 points that out very clearly. That at some point in the future, these two houses are going to be reunited. But they're not reunited now, and they weren't then. But the Magi realized that this king was going to be the king of at least the whole nation of Israel. And as we understand it, even more than that, more broadly, the whole world. If they knew that, we don't know. But that Isaiah 9, 6 and 7 says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there shall be no end upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth, even forever." They would have known that prophecy, and many others, I'm sure. Does that passage suggest a Messiah or a world-ruling king? What was there? Interest. Was it just a religious figurehead, or was it someone with real power and authority? Herod retired from Jerusalem towards the spring of 4 BC. He went east to a hot springs area. He had many health issues at the time. And then he retired to Jerusalem, to Jericho, where he died not many months thereafter. Herod died in the spring of 4 BC, probably mid to late February. And that is as determined by both Josephus and by Fred Coulter. We have Josephus' account of an eclipse that occurred just before these events. And there weren't too many to choose from. There was an eclipse in the spring or in the fall of 5 BC. And most likely, it was the fall eclipse that was the key that gives us a time reference that is pretty certain. There's another internet source that gives us this information regarding these individuals. It says, "So were these just smart men who happened to be looking up at the sky one day and observed something unusual and decided to investigate?" Their answer, no and no. The Magi were an elite members of a governing class in Parthia, or modern-day Iran. They were powerful, educated, and extremely wealthy, and knew astronomy and prophecy, even Bible prophecy. They were from a special caste called Magoi, from which the name Magi comes, with no connection to magic. But because of their knowledge of astronomy and prophecy, they were considered a mystical priesthood. The delegation of Magistanes would have included possibly dozens of Magi, a large entourage of servants, and a vast army to protect them. They would have traveled in grandeur and style, and the sight of them would have inspired not only awe, but fear. There was no way that Herod dared to lay a finger on them. So it's pretty well known, even in the secular world, that these individuals were significant, they were powerful, but they give us insight as to the reality of what was going on here. Jesus Christ was not born just as a religious figure. He is destined to rule the world. That's the underlying message in all of this. Now, we could discuss the unlikelihood of a late December birth, but since there's so many religious and secular sources that address all that, we can leave it to others. But there's events that we do know about that should give us the picture. We have the census and taxation by Caesar Augustus, that all the world should be taxed. Okay, well, all the world has snow in the winter. That little peninsula right in the top there of the Black Sea, that's the Crimea. And if you're watching the news right now, you'll realize it's winter there. Okay, the ground is frozen. There's snow on the ground. The Russians need winter gear and they don't all have it. Okay? All the world would have involved an area that was subject to winter. Now, the typical time of taxation in the Roman Empire was right after the harvest. So that would have been towards the fall, during or around the time of the fall holy days. So that's more likely when Caesar declared the time of taxation. We have the shepherds out in the field. How likely would that have been in the winter? There's many, many sources that say that's highly unlikely that that would have been the case. We have the issue of there being no room in the inn. And when you understand that the Jerusalem area, the greater Jerusalem area, absorbed multiple thousands of people for the holy days, the fact that there was no room in the inn suggests that this was during a holy day season. But even more important, we have the timeline begun with Zacharias, John the Baptist's father, in his temple service. And keep in mind, John the Baptist was born 6 months before Jesus was. But that gives us specific dates that can be logically traced through and brings us to a probable date for the birth of Jesus. And then, of course, we have the visit of the Magi and the component that they add to the overall picture. So where did the date come from? Well, a Roman historian, Hippolytus, is the first one to write that anyone knows of as to where the date came from. He wrote, "The first advent of our Lord in the flesh when he was born in Bethlehem was December 25th, a Wednesday." And that's by a comment, that's in a commentary by T.C. Schmidt, written in about 2010, book 4, so on. But Hippolytus wrote in the 3rd century. What's the connection with that date? Well, something else was going on about that time, and I think it's easy enough to find. Now, there is a booklet. Some of you may have seen this. There's several copies on the back table. It's done by Fred Coulter. And it takes all of the subtle details found in the New Testament and found in Bible prophecy and found in the writings of Josephus. And he takes it and goes through it very analytically. I don't know of anyone who's gone through this as carefully and as thoroughly as Fred has in this booklet. It was written about 26 years ago. I've had it ever since. But there's multiple copies there. Everyone should have this, to get an idea of how much information the New Testament gives us regarding Jesus' birth. It should be important to us to know when and to know the circumstances and the special significance of his birth. That's something that's trivialized in the world today. But he was certainly born to be the king, not just of a particular ethnicity, not just of a particular religion, but the king of the entire world, after all. He was involved in its creation. So I'd suggest you pick up one of these and read it thoroughly. It gives reason to be aware that a lot of the stories told are distorted, fictionalized, marginalized. But God wants us to know these things. He's given clues to the people who are willing to look and to study to know the truth. Why not know? What's wrong with knowing the truth? You know, you'd think it would be a big deal. But so many don't. So many gloss over. So many worship Jesus at this time of the year, not realizing that there's a whole lot more to the story than meets the eye.